Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Greetings and salutations. From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge gleaned from myriad sources and distributed, nay, jammed, nay, forced, nay, shoved at the end of a long, pointy thing that hurts into your brain. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, readying a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
President Obama relieves General Stanley McChrystal of his command. A Death with Dignity house is being planned for Selwood. And a culprit has been caught in yesterday's mystery watermelon incident.
Fantastic. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. Also, please to note, if you are listening to us or attempting to listen or endeavoring to listen via a mobile device, such as a BlackBerry, an Android of some kind, Android is the operating system, a Droid is the phone. If you're on one of the things that you jab at and you point, it has an app, and you're always showing it off to your friends and waving it around in public places and saying, hey, look at this neat thing it does, you can listen to this program via that device. You go to mobile.pdx.fm, mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E dot pdx.fm. And don't forget that pdx.fm is also where the archives of this very fine radio program are available every day once it has drawn to a conclusion. Without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
Here is everything you need to know for Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010. President Barack Obama relieved General Stanley McChrystal of his command over all U.S. military forces in Afghanistan today after the top commander made controversial comments in a magazine article. Obama said he made the decision to accept McChrystal's resignation, quote, with considerable regret, but called it the right step. I don't make this decision based on any sense of personal insult, he says. The president said he has chosen General David Petraeus to replace McChrystal as top Afghan commander and that the move will allow the U.S. to maintain leadership and momentum in the war. Petraeus now oversees the wars in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Obama said McChrystal's magazine comments undermined civilian control of the U.S. military. Earlier, McChrystal was seen leaving the White House and climbing into a van after his nearly half-hour private showdown with the president. In a statement issued later, he said he resigned because of his desire to see the mission succeed. When he was summoned to Washington to explain himself, McChrystal arrived from Kabul early this morning and first met at the Pentagon with Defense Secretary Robert Gates. After his next face-to-face with Obama, the general was not seen returning to the White House for a scheduled Afghanistan strategy session, as had been expected. It was not known where he went, as he did not appear at the Pentagon either.
I think somebody pressed the release the hounds button, or that button that Blofeld has in You Only Live Twice that opens up and then there's a piranha tank, or piranha, as he says, directly underneath the Oval Office. So am I to understand?
Or he just jumped in a car and told his driver, take me to the nearest bar.
Take me anywhere. Am I to understand, though, that McChrystal is so difficult I can't keep track of? Look, I don't mean to sound unpatriotic. I just can't keep track of anything that's going on in any war, anywhere. It seems like there are conflicting reports about this, and I don't mean conflicting reports like disinformation. I just mean like nobody knows what the hell is going on. Wasn't there a story in the middle of last year, in the middle of 2009, that said that Iraq hostilities were about to cease and we were going to be packing up our kit and heading on home?
I think that they've said that a few times.
And then that.
Well, and of course, mission was accomplished, according to Bush in his flight suit,
you know, and
as you'll recall.
And if you ask any number of people, and I'm not faulting Americans for this, is a lot to keep track of in this busy world. But I think there are probably any number of people who aren't really actually, and not like I'm some military expert, but who aren't really aware that there's an Afghan war still going on. That is, in fact, I think much bigger than the conflagration in Iraq. Anyway, so am I to understand that McChrystal walked into the White House, but then no one saw him leave?
Yeah, nobody knows. They figured he would still end up going to the Afghan strategy session. I think everyone thought that he was going to get some kind of a dressing down or something. But I don't think that it was entirely sure that he would actually be let go. He resigned.
To spend more time with his family. And then, so that was followed by him apparently going down the hatch with the squirrels to the other bad nuts.
This actually is kind of a big deal, though, because, I mean, in the Rolling Stone article that caused all of this, McChrystal didn't criticize Obama specifically, but he talked about a period last fall when the president was deciding whether to approve more troops, and he called it painful. And he said that Obama was appeared to be ready to hand him, the general, what he called an unsellable position. And he also said he felt he'd been betrayed by Ambassador Carl Eikenberry, the man that the White House chose to be the diplomatic partner in Afghanistan. And he accused Eikenberry of raising doubts about Karzai. To give himself cover in case the U.S. effort failed. He was basically saying, Eikenberry's covering his ass. Actually, I believe his quote was, now if we fail, they can say, I told you so. And he also mocked Joe Biden. So the thing is, I think they thought, you know, he would get in trouble. But honestly, this is kind of a big deal because presidents don't usually strip high-ranking generals of their duties.
Because
like
the last
this.
Guy to do that was Eisenhower, right?
Truman.
Was it the MacArthur guy?
Was that Harry Truman.
Well, yeah, and he said, leadership.
Yeah, it was during the Korean War.
You're out, okay? All right. This is where I realized that I am, in fact, the ugly American, because you got about the second or third name into the story, and it all just sort of coagulated together into my head. And I was having these weird flashbacks of the teacher pointing at the blank spots in the map and saying, who can identify this country? And no one raising their hand, because I am that guy that can't find anything on a map. I couldn't find my own ass on a map if I had to.
Well, and whenever I hear about Ambassador Carl Eikenberry, I just think of Jill Eikenberry, who was an actress in like the early 80s.
I think of Haley Eisenberg, who was the annoying little girl with the ringleted hair.
On the Pepsi commercials.
That used to say, no smoking, when you'd go to see a movie at Regal Cinemas. Yeah. With a creepy dead doll's eye, like a devil's eyes. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Portland psychiatrist Dr. Stuart Weisberg is about to do something that no one else has done in Portland, in Oregon so far.
He'll eat 51 eggs.
He might do that, indeed, but I'm talking about something else entirely. Okay. He plans to open a home in the Selwood neighborhood where terminally ill Oregonians can kill themselves under the state's death with dignity law.
I'm sorry, I wasn't really laughing at the terminally ill.
No, you were laughing at the...
I mean, they can only complain for so long anyway, I suppose, but that wasn't the part I was mocking.
Weisberg said he felt compelled to act after watching a TV interview with Dr. Jack Kevorkian, who pioneered assisted suicide, and decided that there are too many barriers in Oregon's law. Dr. Weisberg said, very few doctors are willing to approach it, and I think a lot of patients are scared to approach it. It's only until they're desperate because they're suffering so greatly that they even look into it. And by then it's too late and no doctor wants to touch them.
Too many barriers, not nearly enough burials.
Under Oregon law, a legal resident who is terminally ill...
You hear me in the back. I'm sorry. Never mind.
Under Oregon law, a legal resident who is terminally ill and has agreement from two doctors that the person has only 6 months to live is eligible for a lethal dose of drugs from a pharmacy in order to end their own life. The Oregon Department of Human Services reports 59 people used the law to end their lives in 2009. 55 different doctors wrote lethal prescriptions. Still, Dr. Weisberg believes there's need in the community. He posted a website... which is www.endoflifeconsultants.com.
Hold on. Endoflifeconsultants.com. There's no underscores or anything there, right? End of life consultants. Hold on.
And what you'll find is that he seems to be selling sort of a... It's like he's setting up a funeral home before people are dead. Because not only will he, I guess, help you kill yourself, but he also will allow you to purchase catering. Videotaping, music, flowers.
Videotaping of what exactly?
3 hours of a psychiatrist and use of his therapy dog.
No. But
I guess videotaping you dying.
Well, that's for what purpose? Who would possibly? Well, is that like in case the Johnny Law decides to drag you into court or something? Is that where you're on video going like, this is me, Rick Emerson saying life sucks, I'm out. And you know,
your
and
last then, words will be.
What would your last words be? Let me ask you this, Dawn Taylor. I know that in your position at the news desk, you don't wish to engage in editorial observations or any sort of, you wish to make yourself the story. But if you were to have last words, like they just gacked that guy via firing squad in Utah because they love killing people there. And his last words were something wholly uninteresting. And I don't remember what they were. They were so dull they just fell out of my brain immediately. What would your last words be? Like if you were jailed for being a dissident and then you were about to be liquidated?
Well, see, as I believe I've shared with you before long ago on the Rick Emerson Show, my sincerest wish is that I will die by being unexpectedly decapitated.
Unexpected by you or unexpected by others?
Oh, unexpected by me. I don't want to know that it's coming. But they supposedly you still have brain function for like many seconds, up to minutes, but many seconds afterwards. So when you think about how do I want to die, I want to be surprisingly decapitated, but then also have that consciousness where I have that moment where I realize I've been decapitated. So my last thought will be, holy crap, my head came off. Before everything just goes black.
See, but I don't think you'd be able to process it all that much because I think that well, it depends. All right, I have to stop myself here. When you said unexpectedly decapitated, the first thing I thought of was like, you know, like Wilford Brimley in Lederhosen jumping out from behind, out of an alleyway with a chainsaw and saying, hello, Don Taylor. And then right up, you know, like sort of decapitated in a way you wouldn't,
like in a car accident,
or like
for
the Lippensohner stallions, sort of pulling your head off at the end of a bunch of ropes made out of licorice,
right? And then it kind of rolls away a few feet, and then it comes to a stop, and then I look, my eyes open, and I realize my body is actually about 6 feet away from where my head is, and then I realize, hey, that's my body. Oh crap, my head came off, and then of course, then I would be dead.
Did I leave the iron on? The only thing is, I think you would have to be decapitated in such a way. And by the way, we're not medical consultants. If you're going to decapitate yourself or somebody else, that's on you. You shouldn't be turning to us for any sort of actual logistic advice on this. I think that you would have to be decapitated in such an orientation that your head didn't roll anywhere. Because I think if you're rolling, centrifugal force is going to... Welcome to the lunch hour. I believe that the centrifugal force of your head rolling will expel the blood out of what remains of your neck. And so I think your cognitive functions would cease, you know, much faster than normal. Also,
there's the, you know, odds are that my head would come to a stop with my eyes pointed in the wrong direction.
Looking at somebody's shoe.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know what I was looking at.
Well, I would also just think that if you were unexpectedly decapitated and then your head rolled, you know, let's say 3 4/5 rotations, and then it comes to a stop, you got to figure that the next second or two is you getting your bearings, right? Figuring out, wait a minute, okay, that's the post office. What way am I looking? What way's north? Oh, there's my body.
Yeah, what the heck?
You're dead. I don't even know what I was talking about. Anyway, so I'm at endoflifeconsultants.com.
Ah, yes.
This page, by the way, cheerfully enough, is done all in grayscale. And frequently asked questions. Let's just look at a couple of these, and then we'll move on to the next thing. I have generally listed these in order of their frequency. Question one. Is this suicide? I don't even know who is asking who what in that question. Is this suicide? Is what suicide? This is a poorly written
Killing yourself?
Fact.
Of course. Yeah.
But
assisted suicide suicide?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, I guess they're asking him if he does the job, is it suicide? He says, I don't know. This fact is of negligible value, sir.
Yes.
All right, we'll come back to this.
His catering, security, videotaping, music, flowers, and for an additional $1,200, you can have 3 hours with a psychiatrist and his therapy dog. And it says the total package carries a price tag of $5,000. George Egme, a former state lawmaker who helped pass the Death with Dignity law, says that he believes this is a commercialization of Death with Dignity. He's creating a dying house, videotaping it, providing goods and services. I think it degrades what's going on.
All right. I'm going to call him today and get him on the show. All right, hold on a second. I'm making notes to myself because we can't get bogged down in this because you get me on assisted suicide and I can just talk for
now. Who are we going to get on the show? Weisberg?
The guy who's running the death house in Selwood.
Okay.
All right.
That's good.
Seriously, Christ, I mean, you don't even need to build a house. Just drive over that bridge 5 or 6 times. It's going to kill you eventually.
Yeah, he says that he believes it is compassionate. It provides needed service. And he says they can have as many family members there as they want. They can bring their pets. And I guess, for lack of a better expression, do the deed. He sounds pretty classy.
All right. Hold on a second. Later on in the day in the Rick Emerson Show, we're going to be talking much more about this. I got all kinds of questions about the assisted suicide thing. And it's... Just all I'm going to say about it is this. There is what I call the cigarette pack phenomenon with some of these discussions. And what I mean by that is, I learned long ago that if you ask 10 different smokers, hey, why do you smack the pack of cigarettes into your hand before you open it and take one out? No one knows. And everybody claims that their answer is correct and definitive, but then the next smoker claims that that guy is full of crap and that his answer is definitive. And everybody claims they know it's to pack the tobacco. It's to loosen the tobacco. It's to adjust the filter. It's not to adjust the filter. It's because they're cold. It's because they're warm. I have many questions about assisted suicide that I think might fall into that category where there may be no definitive resolution, but we're going to try to find out later on. Let me just make a note to myself. Assisted suicide, death house, and so forth. All right. You are listening to Legion of News on PDX.fm at the Legion of News desk. This is Don Taylor.
A Vancouver man was arrested for throwing a watermelon at an oncoming pickup truck and injuring a driver late Sunday night. You may recall this story from an earlier episode of Legion of News. Gregory Hamilton was driving his pickup eastbound on Southeast 1st Street in Vancouver just before midnight when all of a sudden a watermelon came flying through the air and smashed into his windshield. The startled driver pulled over and called 911. Police said he was treated for possible neck and back injuries. It appeared that the truck's windshield cracked but did not break open, protecting Hamilton from getting hit in the face. On Tuesday, the Columbia newspaper was reporting that the police had made an arrest in the case. The report said that Tylen Lang, 20, was booked on assault charges for allegedly intentionally throwing the full-sized melon at the moving truck. Lang was inside another vehicle when he threw the watermelon, and his friends told him not to do it, according to Vancouver Police spokeswoman Kim Kapp. Kapp said the driver of the vehicle Lang had been riding in reported the crime to police after seeing media reports about the incident.
So this is where the media brought criminal and victim together in one glorious resolution of justice being
and
inflicted.
And there's a photograph of the damage.
Oh, wow.
That's a truck full of melon is what that is. It's like Gallagher gone evil somehow. I'm looking at this and...
This is one of those great stories, too, where it's like, you know what was happening was the guy said, I'm going to throw this out the window. And his buddy's going, don't do it. And then he did it. And they're like, oh, crap. And then everyone was like, well, maybe no one will know it's us.
Uh-huh. The great thing about this is that you know that these guys, and this guy is a particular type of guy. Tylen Lang. What kind of name is Tylen? T-Y-L-A-N.
It's a missing kid's named Chiron. People don't believe in actual real names anymore. They just make crap up so their child can be an extra special little snowflake. I'm sorry, was I a little extra angry about that?
A little slice of editorial interjection there from Don Taylor. All I'm going to say is this guy, Tylen Lang, there are only 12 personality types in the world. It's like somebody will say that there are only three different kinds of stories or movies that can be made: man against himself, man against man, or man against nature. I believe that there are only 12 types of people in the world, and you all know this to be true because everybody within the sound of my voice has met somebody or knows somebody that is exactly like someone else. For example, I always use Courtney Love. I have known over the course of my life not a great number, but a handful of other women who have all of the same personality traits that I just know. I just know, like I know the back of my own right hand, that I know are just rampant in Courtney Love's personality. So there's a Courtney Love type. This guy that throws a watermelon out of a moving vehicle and hits something else, he's a type because he's the same guy. This is the same guy that when he's a kid decides to have Roman candle fights with his best friend, you know, like in the middle of a dried hay field or something. Because I went to school with dozens of these kids, all of whom are dead or maimed or having lots of children and teaching them all to vote exactly the way dad does. But this guy would have been caught eventually because if the media had not solved this, then this guy in some parallel world would have put up a video of the whole thing on YouTube.
Yes.
And then everybody would have seen it and he would have been hoist by his own video.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
A California man has been charged with allegedly hacking into more than 100 computers to look for sexually explicit photos that he then used to blackmail his victims into handing over homemade sex tapes. Luis Mijangos,
may not actually be a correct pronunciation.
Mijangos, 31, was charged with extortion after he allegedly infected more than 100 computers with a virus disguised as a popular song download, which allowed him to take over the personal computers used by about 230 people, including 44 children. U.S. Attorney's Office spokesman Tom Mrozek said that he looked for sexually explicit photos of the computer users, then threatened to email the files to everyone on the victim's mailing list if they did not make homemade pornography for him.
Wow.
The Santa Ana man was also accused of hacking into email and social networking sites so he could pose as the boyfriend of unsuspecting women and teenage girls and ask them to make sex videos. After getting the videos, he would then contact the women under a different alias and demand they make more. Sometimes he even distributed the homemade porn online. Mr. Mihangos?
I'm so confused. Well, let me understand this. So this is, I know that the internet is supposed to make life simpler, but there are a great number of things in the story that are confusing me. Okay, this is one guy who is, and I believe the internet patois terms this, sock puppeting, where there are multiple conversations happening on like a message board or some whatever, but it's all really one guy. And sometimes people who are trying to get a discussion or an argument or a flame war going will, you know, no, you're dumb, Hitler! But it's all the same guy. So he's contacting women and youngish girls, getting photos that they have already taken of, like, their junk, and saying, now make me a video or I'll show this to everybody.
Yeah.
And so, well, I guess if that guy says that to you, I was going to say, well, why don't you just say, well, no, because then the worst he can do is, because then all you're doing is handing the guy, like, live, full motion video of your junk that he can then, which apparently didn't stop him from posting it anyway.
Well, that's sort of the problem with blackmail, though, then, isn't it? I mean,
is it, Don?
Well, if you have we learned nothing from watching thousands of episodes of Law and Order?
Apparently not.
Someone blackmails you, and then you go along with it, and they still continue to hold it over your head.
This is the only copy, right? Yeah, it's the only copy. I didn't make a copy for myself.
No. They're counting on the fact that you would be too humiliated to tell anybody, when in fact what you should do is you should do a David Letterman and just go, oh yeah, screw you.
Yeah.
I'll tell everyone myself. And call the feds.
And by the way, you're going to prison where you will be sodomized repeatedly. Enjoy your night. My only other observation about this is that this is one of those things that will be used as a cudgel to take away my online pornography. And so I cannot have this sort of thing happening. So that is why I am for the full sentence being imposed. I am for whatever the court would like to do to him, whatever compensation the victims feel they are entitled to. I'm all for it. Because I don't want anything threatening my access to Bang Bus.
He also came up with probably the worst sounding justification, you know, this is the worst defense ever.
Wait a minute, hold on. His defense was he was trying to, no, let me think. How does a crazy person think? Jesus wanted him to help these women curb their sinful ways, and so by giving them, it's like a Saw thing. So by giving them a horrible consequence as a result of them taking nude photos of themselves, without which he would not have the means to blackmail them, he is helping to curb them of lustful impulses.
That would have been much more entertaining than his actual thing. He showed up in a wheelchair, he also has a remotely accessed victim's computer webcams and spied on people as well. But he showed up in a wheelchair, and he allegedly told the FBI he was hacking into computers at the request of boyfriends and husbands who wanted to know if their partners were cheating on them.
No, that's totally unconvincing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
terrible.
The other thing is a big load, too, but you might have actually believed it. I mean, you might have believed that he believed it. That is what his excuse, though, is what the British legal system would call a transparent falsehood. All right, no, there you go. Yeah. Is it that hard to find porn on the internet, really? I mean,
wasn't really about finding porn. This was about blackmailing.
This is
some kind of crazy obsessive thing, though, where, you know.
That's the thing. It's like he's blackmailing them not for money, which I at least would understand. It's not like you can just, set up Photoshop and be printing out hundreds. This is the thing where he was just blackmailing them to get more porn.
But I think it's also about control. Yeah. I mean, he's making these women do this thing against their will.
Friend, I don't know if you spent. Where does he live?
California.
Okay.
Most of these women were the Long Beach area of California.
Okay, look, I've spent a little bit of time in Long Beach, and I suspect Dawn has as well. You know, if your whole thing is to get women to just shake their cakes, if you got like $1.50, probably within walking distance of your house, you can get a girl to come do that on your couch, I would imagine. I mean, for less than your internet connection is probably costing you. So just, you know, word to the wise when you get out. All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A 16-year-old British boy who A 16-year-old British boy who fatally stabbed a former friend after they traded insults on Facebook was jailed for at least 14 years. The boy, who was 15 at the time of the murder, knifed Salum Combo, 18, in the chest over a loss of face after they argued on the social networking site. The defendant murdered his friend after a series of dispute on Facebook, which escalated over time, and came to a head when Combo called the boy a pussy online. A meeting was planned between the two boys outside of a restaurant on December 20th, and they walked away together. Soon afterward, the defendant pulled out a knife and stabbed Combo in the chest. Combo reportedly then fell to the ground as the murderer yelled, "Nobody calls me a pussy. I don't care if I go to jail." The boy was found guilty of murder by the Old Bailey jury last month.
You know, this world is just like a big self-cleaning oven. You know what I mean? It's just, if you're crazy or has crazy, you know, if you have crazy friends, eventually all of you get removed from the repopulation pool. The thing about that, though, is here's the thing that I think about sometimes. I wonder how it is that there are not more crimes. Like, I mean, like full-on serious crimes. Like, I don't mean crime. Like, hey, I'm downloading this little Wayne song. Like an actual real like stabby crime, posted online in glorious full motion video for everybody to watch. It just seems like there are cameras everywhere. Everybody's got. I know I sound like an old guy, but everybody's got a cell phone. Everybody's got Wi-Fi. Everybody's got a laptop. There are goddamn security cameras on the corner. There's a security camera actually in George Orwell Plaza in London. So you can insert your own irony here.
Where better?
Well, can I just tell you this? And I had just the most.
There should be microphones too.
I had the longest, most drawn out argument with somebody about whether, and I can't remember what side of the argument I took, as is sometimes the case. It just became terribly important that I win, and I think I eventually made the other person cry, and so then that was good enough for me.
Score.
I couldn't remember though. I can't remember which side of the argument I took, but there was this whole debate about whether a camera being in George Orwell Plaza was ironic or not. Because I got a whole thing about the word irony, and I'm kind of the irony police. I've gotten better about it. I used to just berate people endlessly about misusing the word irony. But then the thing is, then it just became a whole thing that everybody did, and and everybody was doing it wrong, and the stress involved was so disproportionate to my interest in correct grammar that I just had to throw in the towel at some point. Anyway, there are so many cameras everywhere. Does it strike you as odd that there aren't more? There's 6 billion people on Earth. If you figure that 1/10 of 1% of the 6 billion people are full-on, like, bat-ass crazy, and if you figure that half of those guys have got a video camera, and if everybody's got Wi-Fi and internet access, why aren't there more stabbings and shootings and, hey, watch me mug a guy just being stuck on the internet? Because criminals are dumb. I mean, as a rule, to a man, they're all dumb in one way or another. So it seems like more crimes ought to be. It doesn't. I'm not requesting that you go commit crimes just so I can watch them, not as such, but not per se, not in any legally quantifiable sense. But doesn't it seem like there ought to be more of that?
Quite possibly. I
that was the longest question for in fact a 4-syllable response.
I know. I'm not sure what to. Yes. But there should be more of
that. For example, and I don't get sidetracked. We're trying to be a little more streamlined with this program because I do have a tendency to how I do go on. But
the more you talk about stuff, the less news stories I have to actually read. So that I'm good with it.
It's fewer news stories, by the way.
I'm
just saying it surprises me. At the Legion of News Desk, this is Don Taylor.
I have two stories here just for you, Rick Emerson. The first from Kennewick, Washington.
Thanks.
Police say they caught a man making a slow getaway on a stolen riding mower. The Tri-City Herald reports officers responding to a burglary call Tuesday morning found a 31-year-old man riding the mower in the street, pulling a trailer of stolen lawn care equipment.
What did I just say about criminals being stupid to a man?
He was jailed for investigation of burglary, theft, and drug charges.
Was he drunk at least? Please tell
me. It was Kennewick. I'm certain he was.
I just drunk on his own ignorance. It seems like at the bare minimum, if he was drunk, you could say to yourself, well, he didn't know any better. But but this implies that he just didn't know any better as like a permanent state of his intellectual being. All right.
Well, he stole the. It seems like
on a riding lawnmower.
I'm sure at the time it seemed like. A brilliant solution. He was stealing all these things. There was a trailer. There was a riding mower.
What is the loudest, slowest vehicle I can possibly find?
It didn't occur to him that the police would actually, like, chase him down.
I don't know that there was any actual chasing involved, but that's just I'm just speculating.
Well,
You are listening to Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. This is PDX.FM. Don't forget, coming up today at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show begins over at rickemerson.com. That is at 1 p.m. today. You can also hear it in the archived form later on at rickemerson.com. Coming up today, Portland raconteur, writer and man about town, David Walker, will be joining us. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the burning question, is the father in Finding Nemo a transgender, hermaphrodite?
Transsexual.
Is the father in Finding Nemo a transsexual? That'll be addressed today. That's coming up at 1 o'clock as part of the Rick Emerson Show. This is Don Taylor.
I'm going to save the other Rick Emerson-centric story for later during the entertainment news.
All right,
it'll be more appropriate. Here's a lovely story about excess and why other parts of the world hate Western culture. Virgin unveiled the latest addition to Richard Branson's luxury fleet on Friday, an underwater plane that will fly riders to the depths of the Caribbean Sea. Guests on Necker Island, a retreat in the Virgin Islands, will be able to dive underwater in a submarine dubbed the Necker Nymph for $25,000 a week. But that's only after shelling out around $300,000 for a one-week stay on the island, which is privately owned by billionaire and Virgin Group chairman Richard Branson.
I'm confused. If you're staying for... how long does it cost to stay for a week on the island?
Well, here, basically, the...
You're doing that old person thing, by the way. You're holding the paper at arm's length. Hold on a second. It's
let me put on my glasses.
Do you wear bifocals? Be honest.
I need bifocals.
You don't wear them, do you?
I don't wear them.
You
I wear reading glasses, and when I put on the reading glasses, you across the table are grossly out of focus.
If it makes you feel better, they don't call them bifocals anymore because they know that it makes us feel old, and so they call them progressive lenses.
Yeah. Right. I need them, and I've been. Yeah.
All right. So it costs how much to stay on the island for a week?
Well, the island itself costs $400,000 per week to rent. And then you also need to charter Branson's 105-foot yacht, which is $88,000 a week. Or now you can rent the underwater submarine plane for $25,000 a week.
So this is my question. The underwater submarine plane, which does sound awesome, by the way, and I don't even like the water. I got a whole thing. The water and I are not that. We don't really get along. I don't care to be near, on, above, in, around, in the vicinity of water that's over my head. But the underwater sea plane jet thing, whatever it is. Is that 25? If that 25, I'm asking as though it's like something that I'm seriously, like I've got a spreadsheet out. Is that for 24-hour day access? Or is that like, do I have to wait in line?
I believe so. Well, it's $25,000 a week. That's.
So it's like renting a car from Alamo or something.
Yes. Although you do also, there is a pilot, so I'm sure.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in other words, if I'm going to shell out 25 grand for an underwater sea airplane, which just sounds, it sounds glorious and yet. Like from 1930 at the same time.
But wait till you see the picture of it.
I want to be able to call that guy up at like 2:15 in the morning and say, hey, take me to the bottom of the ocean. Do it now. I don't want to have to like stand in line with some other jackasses.
Well, it'll take two riders and then a pilot. The underwater plane uses downward pressure on its wings to fly through the water for up to 2 hours at a time, while an open cockpit gives the riders a 360-degree view. Its typical speed is 2 to 5 nautical miles per hour, and it can dive more than 100 feet.
What is a nautical mile per hour? I'm asking. You don't know. I already know you don't know.
Well, I think that means any direction in... Because that's the thing is that I have no idea.
But
I was going to try and make something.
You're saying it's not in a straight line,
right?
It is a. No, because that wouldn't make any sense. Because then you would just. That's the same thing on the on land.
Okay.
Like to get here, it's not like I'm driving in a straight line from my. I'm not coming as the crow flies. Really? Are you, in fact, Googling nautical mile? You know that we have people for that. They're called listeners.
Nautical mile is a unit of length corresponding approximately to 1 minute of arc latitude along any meridian.
Thanks for clearing that up, Don. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Rick Emerson, appreciate you. No, we have. Here's the thing. With the audience, what I've learned is, you know what the audience is like? Do you read, and I know the answer to this is no as well, do you read the comic strip BC? No? Let me tell you. Here's the thing that happens in the strip BC. There's this recurring gag, not funny. But a recurring gag nonetheless, where a guy writes a question on a stone tablet, throws it into the water, and then like a day later it comes back from some mysterious guy with answer. The audience is the other guy, and this this radio program is the stone tablet. So somebody please not to explain in simple English language that we can understand with our tiny, feeble brains what a nautical mile is. Thank you. Here is Don Taylor.
I guess we're done with this. There's a photograph.
There's
of
nowhere
the plane,
else I can go with this. Wow. This looks exactly like, okay, you know what this looks like, and I realize this is radio. You can see this, I believe it's CNNmoney.com, and also I think there's an article about this on Drudge today. This is, you just Google Richard Branson and seaplane or whatever, underwater plane. I'm looking at this now. You fellow Gen Xers, what I'm talking about, this looks exactly like the underwater shark vehicle. That's Shark, S-H-A-R-C, from G.I. Joe. If you had the G.I. Joe figure, and I forget the guy's name. I think his name is Deep Six or something.
Oh, yeah.
But
come on, nice, go with me here.
Nice fake. I appreciate it. No. Good effort. Good hustle.
Oh, him.
It is the shark vehicle, which is an underwater plane that they had for the G.I. Joe thing. And the guy, I think his name is Deep Six, and he had this sort of like the Abyss helmet, and he had like a little pump, like a you do, and then it's like something would happen and something would float.
I thought it looked kind of like one of the underwater vehicles on Thunderbirds.
I could see that too. Those are both, those are both perfectly valid comparisons. All right, I'm going to put this over here.
A 14-year-old girl in St. Helens, Oregon, stole the keys to her mother's car and took three different law enforcement agencies and road spikes to stop her. She wants attention. She doesn't care whether it's good or bad attention, said her mother.
There's a whole raft of boys out there who are making a date on the calendar that is 4 years from today.
It took St. Helens Police, the Columbia County Sheriff's Office, and Rainier Police to get the 14-year-old off the road. She sped, drove the wrong way, and flipped her van over three times before it caught on fire.
Is she okay? Is she alive?
No, she's not seriously hurt. She had some stitches, a few bumps and bruises, but the family's 94 Dodge van is pretty much dead.
Would you say that she said that she wants attention of any kind? She doesn't care if it's good or bad. Also, she stole a car and it took four cops to stop her, and also the van caught on fire. And she's from St. Helens.
Yeah.
Is she a handsome girl? Is she an aesthetically pleasing
girl? I haven't seen a photo. Her mother says that her daughter has some anger management issues.
So much the better. In 4 years. Not now, you understand. Not now or in fact, 2 or 3 years. But in 4 years from now, at a minimum, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Their daughter was sent to the Cowlitz County Juvenile Detention Center.
Facing, she'll be schooled in the ways of love.
Facing unauthorized use of motor vehicle and harassment charges. I'm also thinking perhaps it's a good idea that she is somewhere because, speaking of those anger management programs,
she's a cutter.
Well, apparently when she got home on Sunday after the incident, her mother said, and this is a quote, "She flipped out, started slapping her sister, hitting my father, and we called the police. As much as we want her home, it's beyond our parental control. We can't control her. We love her. We tell her that we love her. Sorry, we tell her that we love her. But it goes on ear and out the other." Who wrote this? It goes on ear.
Probably a member of the family.
But yes.
When she came home, did she come home and this whole dust up with the slapping and the hitting and the, you know,
beating up her grandpa?
You're not my father. Did that all happen after she stole the van?
Yes.
And then it flipped it over and it caught on fire. Why was she back at home if she'd stolen? That is, I believe, what the man calls Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, but she's 14, too. So I think if the parents we won't press charges. We'll just. But then apparently later she was, you know, taken to a detention center. So I don't.
Because I think setting fire to a vehicle in public is probably, that's a crime, regardless of whether the guy with the vehicle thinks it's okay or not.
This is St. Helens. St. Helens is the town where I used to edit the local newspaper. And it's its own backwater, St. Helens.
One big Tennessee Williams play.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the land that produced Morgan Grace and Timmy Ryan. So, no, that's Sweet Home. I'm sorry. I'm confusing St. Helens and Sweet Home. St. Helens, I think, produced Scott Daly. So,
yes. Yeah. Though he doesn't live there anymore.
No, he doesn't. No, he lives like 10 feet from me. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Until he steals your van and goes on a high-speed chase and rolls it and sets it on fire.
You know, as long as he's not, like, pooping in my driveway, then. Not that Scott Daly's likely to do that. I should give some background on that story. Scott Daly, who is a longtime friend of the Rick Emerson Show and who is the part of Geek in the City, and he and Aaron Duran do a great number of projects together and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying he poops in people's driveway. I should be very clear about this. Scott Daly, to the best of my knowledge, I mean, like, I haven't like I didn't watch them last night or anything. But I at one point did in glorious Southeast Portland, where I make my home, did in fact find the leavings of a homeless person in my driveway at one time a couple years back. So, but yeah, so now Scott lives like a block from me or whatever, which is just kind of under me. I like people know where I am.
Listeners have chimed in, by the way, to inform us that a nautical mile is the distance between...
what did I tell you?
Something having to do with the equator. It's 1.15 normal miles. And Thomas Gill, as is fairly typical for information from Thomas Gill, he says, 1 mile is 5,280 feet. 1 nautical mile is 6,039 feet, about 1,000 fathoms.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a little bit more than an actual
And he
mile.
Also robbed me the whole I can't fathom this whole discussion joke. So thanks for that. Oh. All right. So does that mean that if I just drive, please, and I'm not asking everybody to weigh in again on this because then it's just going to take us down a whole other arterial. But I wonder if that means that if I drive 6,000 feet in my car, I have actually gone on, or whatever it is, if I can go a nautical mile. Here's why. Because I want to start giving directions to things in nautical miles. Just, you know.
There's probably an app for that on the iPhone.
Probably. Just, you know, like for a goof. This is Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Don't forget, if you're hearing only part of this program, you can hear the whole thing archived later on today right here at PDX FM, PDX.fm, or also at legionofnews.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show will get underway. We'll be talking with Mr. David Walker. Also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today we will answer the burning question, is the father in Finding Nemo a transsexual? I have many, 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 many questions to ask about this death house that's opening in Selwood. And and I had a whole disaster this morning involving makeup. So we'll get to that later. Anyway, here's Don Taylor.
A nurse famously photographed being kissed by an American soldier in New York's Times Square in 1945 to celebrate the end of World War II has died at the age of 91, her family said on Tuesday. The VJ Day picture of the white-clad Edith Shane by photographer Alfred Eisenstadt captured an epic moment in U.S. history and became an iconic image marking the end of the war after being published in Life magazine.
There was a whole, the big imbroglio a couple years ago, right? Wasn't there like 9 different women who were like, it's me, yeah. It's me, I am Spartacus. And they all were claiming that they were the nurse.
Yeah, she apparently just spent most of her life not telling anyone that it was actually her. But then eventually...
See, I love
like,
stories
ah,
like
she
that.
She felt, ah, it was me.
You know, boy, do you ever want to just listen to a tireless, droning tedium that'll make you want to pull out your own eyes with an ice cream scoop? Listen to a bunch of women's studies majors talk about that photograph. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's like taking a bandsaw to your junk. I mean, it's just sitting there just listening to this endless, interminable discourse about
she's
that
being
photograph.
Used and violated.
Because she's being dominated by the patriarchy and whatever. And it's like you just want to jam knitting needles into your ears like about 14 minutes into that conversation.
Here's Don Taylor. Not that I know anything about that firsthand.
I believe this would be a good time to do entertainment news.
Fantastic. From Legion of News, this is your entertainment news for Wednesday, the 23rd of June.
Actor Val Kilmer is appearing before commissioners in San Miguel County, New Mexico, saying he hopes something good comes from the hearing after he was quoted making disparaging comments about the community. Commissioners invited Kilmer to appear Wednesday and explain the comments published years ago in Rolling Stone and Esquire magazines. Some residents have also complained that Kilmer chased away people fishing on the Pecos River at his ranch. The actor who starred in Tombstone, Top Gun, and The Doors has maintained that his words were taken out of context and misunderstood. He says that he loves the San Miguel County area, where he has lived for more than a dozen years. Before the meeting, Kilmer told reporters he understands the concerns of residents when they hear something negative about their community.
I don't understand. What is he being charged with? This is very confusing.
Because
the same thing happened to Rob Lowe a couple years ago, and I didn't understand it then either.
Apparently, he said some snotty things about where he lives. It says years ago in Rolling Stone and Esquire.
And so are they suing him, or is he just apologizing?
No, I think he was just asked to appear before the county commissioners.
Who appear to be a bunch of bellyaching crybabies.
Yeah, and explained why he... said, and I don't even know what they said. God only knows. It was probably just something like, they have a lot of meth here or something. And you know, God only knows what.
It's like when Stephen King one time, he used to live in a place called Herman, Maine. And I've never been there. But he lived in Herman, Maine. And apparently it was not a pleasant time. And he, in a
interview in Playboy magazine, Stephen King described Herman Mayne as being, quote, the a-hole of the universe. And apparently the people of Herman Mayne were not happy to hear their town described in that fashion. So he then, I think he revised it to say that it was, in fact, the armpit of the universe. But people, you know, civic pride is a strange thing. And here's, have you noticed this, too? That civic pride, the strength of civic pride is always disproportionate to the amount that the town actually deserves any pride. Like, you will never, I think maybe the exception to that, I think, is New York. People from New York are very sort of, you know, outwardly boastful about it. But in my experience, really, really big cities, people are just sort of like, you know, hey, this is our town, you know, up yours. But like the smaller you get, the more and more events and festivals and happenings a town has to fill its schedule with to try to convince you that it's really a happening place. Flint, Michigan, you'll love our new spark. Whenever anybody says our town is on the map, finally, for, you know that it is not, in fact, on the map.
Well, here we go. This all started when Kilmer's Pecos River Ranch sought to open 3 guest houses to paying customers. The County Zoning and Planning Commission approved the proposal 3-2 in March, but one of the local residents, Abram Tapia, appealed to the commission.
Sounds like a fun-loving guy.
He told the AP, he's not a good neighbor. That's all there is to it. He'd never met Val Kilmer, but he proceeded to tick off a list of reasons why the actor, you know, is on his list. And on it was Kilmer has allegedly made comments to magazine articles. In Rolling Stone in October 2003, he said he lived in the homicide capital of the Southwest and that 80% of the people in my county are drunk.
Now, do we know for a fact that those things are not actually accurate? I mean, you know, look, everybody, some place has got to be the homicide capital of the Southwest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah. Who knows? These
things
may not actually be incorrect. All right.
Well, he also Kilmer also told an Esquire writer 2 years later that the emotional toll that acting takes on an artist, he explained it by talking about soldiers who were shipped off to Vietnam and how they were mentally unprepared for the horror of war. And he also ended up saying that most of them were sent to the war because they were borderline criminal or poor. Well, this neighbor of his who's annoyed by him is an army vet. And so he doesn't like that kind of talk about the military. And he also accused Kilmer of being racist, saying the actor is trying to create a segregated facility at the ranch by charging people to stay at the guest houses. Tapia reasons that local Hispanics in the area would be excluded because they wouldn't be able to afford it.
I honestly don't even know who I'm rooting for in this story anymore.
Yeah.
I just, this appears to be a case where I don't give a rat's ass what happens to anybody involved in this tale. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
For you, Rick Emerson, again in New Mexico, the New Mexico Lottery is partnering with the rock band Kiss to produce the first ever Kiss Scratcher Lotto game in the nation.
Fantastic.
Proceeds from the sale will help boost the state's college tuition assistance program. Officials said the announcement is already creating a lot of buzz after the band posted the game on its Facebook page. Players from all over the world are calling us and asking us if they can buy this ticket.
Who said this? Was it Gene or Paul?
No, this is some woman from the New Mexico
Lottery. Oh, come on. They didn't even get the band to speak on the record for this? That means I can't drag out one of my Kiss sound effects. Damn it.
The game also features a second chance drawing where you could win tickets to a Kiss concert and a chance to meet the band.
Is this the second chance drawing? Never mind. I was going to make a cruel joke at the expense of Peter Criss, but, you know, he came on the show and he was a really nice guy. So I was going to say in the second chance drawing for Kiss, that's where, like, you win something and then you just piss it away all over again.
All right, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to be a callous person.
No.
The thing about Kiss is that, you know what you talked about with Letterman, where the guy tried to blackmail Letterman, and Letterman just said, "Hey, suck on this, pal. Hey, I'm stooping everybody at work." And then he just robbed the guy of all of his blackmail material, and then also the guy's going off to be pounded in the backside in a prison somewhere, which is, you know, gratifying and efficient on any number of levels. The great thing about Kiss is that it is impossible for anyone to ever label them like sellouts or crass or, you know, well, you're money grubbing. I mean, there's just...
They say, yes, we are.
It's like trying to parody Gilligan's Island. It just can't be done. I mean, they have just absolutely I remember seeing...
Well, they started out, you know, it's like, and we're gonna put on makeup and wear these big outfits and make ourselves as commercially, you know, fascinating as possible so we can sell you things.
Well, you know, which I admire. Rick Emerson salutes that and respects it. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show, which you can get for $6.99 a month, begins at 1 p.m. Along with the Rick Emerson Show, you'll be able to get access to the archives as well. And you'll be able to hear bonuses and extra features that...
You'll be entered in a second chance drawing where you can meet Rick Emerson.
Suddenly turned into Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross there. But, you know, Gene said that thing about, we didn't want to be a band, we wanted to be a brand. And it's sort of a Rorschach, because Peter Carlin, our good friend from The Oregonian, it looks at that statement and is horrified. And I just sort of go like, well done, Gene Simmons. Sometime, not today, not tomorrow, probably not this week, remind me to bring in, I have the greatest thing. It was given for my birthday this year. Our friend Tim Oakley, who seems to have designed everything on Earth. He knows I'm a big Kiss fan. And Kiss did this auction for, is it Christie's? Is that the auction house? Kiss did an auction in 2000, and I'm glad I didn't know about it at the time, because I would have sold my organs and the organs of anybody who was asleep around me for enough money to go there. But he designed the auction book. You know, when you go there and it shows you what is being auctioned off and then how much you could expect to pay for it, like what the what the likely bid is going to be. And he designed that, and he has a copy of it, and he gave it to me. And it's the most It is the most unreal thing. The thing that indicates to you, and this is the last thing I'll say about it, we got to move on. The thing that more than anything else in that auction catalog of Kiss's things that were being auctioned off, and when I say Kiss, I don't mean Peter, I don't mean Ace, I mean Gene and Paul, who just had the foresight to keep and file and save everything. For $800 is the expected opening bid, you could take part in an auction in which you were buying, I swear to Christ, pages from Gene Simmons' day planner from 1973.
Really?
It was pages from, like, his to-do calendar. You know, like today, pick up laundry, try to get record deal. Also go to deli, pick up horseradish, whatever. He had pages from his daily planner from 1973, and he was... And you weren't even getting the whole planner. You were getting a page. You were getting January 23rd, 1973, for $700. Who does that? You know who does that? A guy who looks at everything he owns and says, this will all be worth millions of dollars someday, and who, as it turns out, was right. So God bless him.
The only time I've ever felt like that about anything is there was a point when Jeffrey Dahmer's lawyer announced at one point that he was going to auction off all of Jeffrey Dahmer's like household possessions, and then the money was going to go to the victims' families. And I immediately was like, how much does it cost to get a plane ticket to get out there to do this? Because just the idea of just getting anything from his kitchen, just Jeffrey Dahmer Tupperware, in any case, and just would have been just awesome. And then understandably, the victims' families and certain people were outraged and said they thought it was in poor taste.
I think I speak for everyone when I say shut it. Because if 100 years, what does that guy say? What does Belloc say in Raiders of the Lost Ark? This watch is $50, buried in the desert for 1,000 years, and men will kill for it. Men like you and I, Dr. Jones. I'm not trying to be insensitive, but I mean, if you had something from the assassination of Abraham Lincoln or anybody, it would be viewed properly as a historic artifact. Just because something happened 5 years ago, or last week, or 50 years ago, that means it's not history. So if you're offended by it, you know what? That's just hard cheese, as they say somewhere. So just move on. I don't have anything from Jeffrey Dahmer. I have a listener of mine. He's got a business card from John Wayne Gacy's contracting company, because his brother was a cop, and when they were going through Gacy's house, the brother saw a box of business cards. And they already knew at that point, like, the stink of death was heavy, and they were like, oh, this will be a big case. Let's go in my pocket. And so the listener put it in his will that if he dies before me, I get the business card.
That's nice.
In your face. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Lindsay Lohan plans to promote her new handbag and accessories collection in a nude photo shoot. The problem being that she is wearing a court-ordered alcohol monitoring bracelet.
I think I speak for
it's hard to say.
All the guys when I say that is hot.
Posing naked is nothing new for the former Mean Girl star, who modeled for a Marilyn Monroe-inspired semi-nude shoot for New York Magazine in 2008. This time, however, photographers will have to work around her Scram surveillance tag. An executive at the California Bag, the company planning to license her accessory range, told LA Magazine that they were thinking of having police on hand so we can remove the ankle bracelet for the pictures.
I don't understand why they don't...
I know, the pictures would be way better with her wearing it.
Because that is a girl that is likely to go home with you if you run into her, like, not even at a bar, like anywhere at any time, because she's either drunk or wanting to be drunk or wanting to do something that takes the place of drunkenness.
And honestly, if you're doing something for publicity's sake, people are going to seek out this ad campaign if she's wearing the ankle bracelet, if you can see it in the ad. Otherwise, it's just like, oh, yeah, there was that ad campaign she did, and they had to take the bracelet off, and she's naked again.
Do you ever just see these ad campaigns where somebody will make an executive decision at a company, and you just wonder, like, why didn't they come and ask me or, like, anyone on the street, and we would have told them, you're doing this all wrong. The key is to have her wearing the – and here's the other thing, because my thing is that in most cases – I won't say that I don't take sides and things, and I certainly have opinions – but I just like to see people annoyed is kind of my thing. Like, I just like for there to be trouble. That's really what it comes down to. I just like discord and strife. I like it when there I like it when things break down. I like it when there's upheaval in the system. I just like for there to be angst and upset. And so in a story like this, I can see all sides of the argument. I understand that she's a menace and that she's drunk all the time. And I think it was probably, I don't know if she was behind the wheel when she was driving, but it seems likely that she might have been at some point. So, you know, I'm not saying she'd be
behind drinking. The wheel when she was driving?
You know what I'm saying, when she was drinking. I don't know if she ever got busted for DUI officially, but it seems plausible. So I understand that that's wrong. At the same time, look, I'm just going to, here's a little truth. And this is something that no one will really say because you're not supposed to. But you know that it's true. Everyone finds mothers against drunk driving irritating. Mm. All right? I'm not saying you should drive drunk. You shouldn't. It's wrong and you shouldn't do it. It's illegal and immoral and no fooling. You don't do it. It's a bad thing to do in any number of ways. But the organization Mothers Against Drunk Driving bugs you. And they bug me. They bug all of us. You're just not supposed to say it. I would love to see her do the ad campaign where she's wearing the ankle bracelet that monitors alcohol because you know then some mad type group would start kvetching about it. They would just start bitching and moaning about
it. Glamorizing alcoholism.
Defeating the whole purpose. And, you know, it would be some blue hair. The same people who wanted
to... And you're making the young kids think that drinking is cool.
Exactly. And see, here's the other thing. Can I say something
like
else?
They don't already think that.
Here's the other thing that you know. I'm going to say this. This is one of those moments where I'm going to say something and you will say, my God, Rick Emerson. However do you see into the societal soul? And I'll say, I don't know. It's a gift. I was born with the call. What will happen is she'll do this ad campaign. She'll wear the ankle monitoring bracelet. Because it's not a low jack, right? It's just to see if she's drinking.
Right.
I will guarantee you that the next thing you will see, perhaps in a variety of hip-hop videos, will be dudes wearing not just a low jack, but like an alcohol monitoring bracelet like around some part of their body as a fashion statement. You know it. Just as soon as I say it, you know it's true. So I'm all for it. I hope she does that.
Well, on TV tonight, you can look forward to Harp Dreams on PBS, in which filmmaker Suzanne Schwibbs follows six young harpists on the 2007 USA International Harp Competition.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to clean my toenails.
On TLC, I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant, Double Trouble. A nursing student discovers she's pregnant following an emergency appendectomy. And a teenager who was told she was unable to bear children after an aggressive chemotherapy treatment learned she's actually pregnant.
Is that, I'm unclear, is that happy or sad?
I have no idea.
I don't know how to feel about that.
On Throwdown with Bobby Flay, it's a chicken tikka masala throwdown where they make it, he has a cook-off against a owner of a popular Indian eatery. There's another episode of I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant at 9:30, in which an 18-year-old experiences sudden weight gain and fatigue and believes her poor diet and busy work schedule are to blame.
Fantastic. These all sound like people who are going to make excellent parents.
At 10 p.m., Cedric the Entertainer's Urban Circus on TBS.
I thought he was dead. No, that's Bernie Mac.
That's Bernie Mac.
Confusing my black comedians. I'm sorry. Rick Emerson regrets the error.
He hosts a comedy special featuring Jerry Seinfeld, Russell Peters, J.B. Smoove. And
really? Yeah. J.B. Smoove?
And we have a new episode of Toddlers and Tiaras on TLC tonight, which is one of those great shows about kitty beauty pageants.
Okay.
I can't get enough of those. Yeah. Those delightful.
Put that on my to-don't list. All right. Don't forget the Rick Emerson show is coming up in a few moments. We'll be talking to Mr. David Walker today. Also, Pop Culture Authority addresses the issue of Finding Nemo. Was the father in Finding Nemo, in fact, a transsexual? We'll have more on the Death House. Talk about my awkward mishap this morning. We'll talk about the mystery top five. We will finally get to that today. We'll try to figure out. I got these five songs that I had set aside for a top five before they fired us last year, but I have no idea what the unifying theme is. So we'll get to all that and so forth.
It is 12:58. Shall we do one more story?
Try to cram it in here. Yeah.
All right. The United States ranked last when compared to six other countries: Britain, Canada, Germany, Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand, When it comes to health care, we spend twice as much as residents of other developed countries, it is found, but get lower quality, less efficiency, and have the least equitable system, according to a report released today.
The best part is we don't ever need to update this story. We can just read it every week and it'll be accurate forever.
Yes. In 2007, health spending was $7,290 per person in the United States, more than double that of any other country in the survey. Australians, well, I'm not going to read you the numbers because it's more than double that of any other country in the survey. Yet we get less for our money. We rank last on safety and do poorly on several dimensions of quality. We do particularly poorly on going without care because of cost. And we also do surprisingly poorly on access to primary care and after-hours care. The report looked at five measures of healthcare: quality, efficiency, access to care, equity, and the ability to lead long, healthy, productive lives.
Have a great day. Walk carefully. This is Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. We will see you again tomorrow at noon right here on PDX.fm for another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.